So, as to questions, has anyone prepared some good question which can be useful for all of us as to the Four Illimitables meditation? If there is no question, we have got some questions here, so we are still having way out. No question? So I will read some of the questions we have here, which we have not managed to answer. When I focus on my breathing to concentrate my mind, when experiencing severe drowsiness or wandering thoughts during the meditation on the Illimitables or during Anapana meditation, I would feel severe tightness in my breathing and chest area. I understand this is due to attachment, clinging, and as a result, I am controlling my breathing unintentionally. However, I have difficulty overcoming this. Would you have any practice solution or ways I can work through this? A very good question. Remember, the samsara of the meditator is precisely the tendency of mind to agitation or to thinking. So, everything has that we experience in the world, according to Buddhism, has causes and conditions. Nothing that we experience is not without causes and conditions. We should always be clear about it. And to solve all problems without exceptions, the most powerful way is the wisdom, knowledge. According to Buddhism, we are in the state of suffering because of ignorance, no other reason. And ignorance implies all these unwholesome states of our mind. There is no unwholesome state of mind without ignorance. We should always be aware of it. So this agitated mind and the dull mind or sinking mind, sleepiness, they are the direct expression of our ignorance. So we should be aware of it. So we should investigate what ignorance is there. The first investigation should be turned to the object. Is the object of our meditation clear or not? If the object of meditation is clear, these states can be controlled. If the object of meditation is not clear, these states are very difficult to control. So the first job of the meditator is to make sure the meditation object is clear. If the meditation object is not clear, the mind will have tendency to sink, to sleepiness, to boredom, and it will look for other objects or remember other objects. Objects of enjoyment or objects of repulsion. So, all kinds of different images and feelings may arise. And the object of our meditation becomes lost. or we just on the verge of drowsing. So this situation should not be allowed, definitely should not be allowed. So how can we prevent this situation from arising? By first of all, by having faith and enthusiasm about what we're doing, so we should strengthen them. If our mind is sinking, or if the mind is too excited, we should make sure that we are fighting it with proper means, which are concentration, relaxation, and detachment in case our mind is agitated. Only if we work in this way, we will develop mindfulness. Otherwise, we will not develop mindfulness. If mindfulness is there, these tendencies will be checked without using force. If the mindfulness is not there, we will be tight and try to use force to get rid of these influences, which have already become very powerful. And so the tightness comes, tiredness comes, because one is always fighting with the use of force, not by removing obstacles with mindfulness. So learning meditation is learning, first step of learning is to learn to remove obstacles not by force but by mindfulness. If one can do it, then these rough conditionings like tightness in the body or sleepiness, they will be removed. Because when we use mindfulness to remove obstacles, not force, then our mind becomes more subtle and we are more working on a more subtle level. If we work on a gross level, we will be very tired. Our body will not be comfortable. We will not experience any relaxation and clarity, and we will be frustrated. So we will have no enthusiasm for our meditation, and we will have not faith that we can do it. So it is very essential, now you have learned the four illimitables, that before you pay meditation, before you pay attention to your meditation object, you relax. Don't, if you work on breath, don't try immediately to focus on the breath if you are a beginner. First relax completely, pay attention to the breath in the whole body. Pay attention to some object that you can clearly experience. Not that you experience when you're fighting. If you experience while fighting, the object will never be clear. Only when you experience the object with certain relaxation and easiness, it can become very clear. If by fighting, you are bound to lose it very soon. So the first step for meditators, which is very important, is not to try immediately hard to focus on one small spot under the nose, but to relax, paying attention to the breath where it is very obvious. Then when you can stay a long time with your object, only then you should try to put your attention on the upper lip or on the top of the nose. And you will do it without too much effort. Then, only when you experience the breath clearly, you will be able to relax. Otherwise, not. And the metta meditation is meant precisely for relaxing. So you can do, before doing any meditation, you can do some, if you are used to metta, then the metta feeling will come spontaneously. You don't need to search for it. If you're not used to metta, then you do this first stage of meditation on yourself. Feel yourself with I am in this body and to this body and mind connected by the breath. You transfer these four wishes. Try to feel yourself very clearly and relax by breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in, you can wish yourself happiness. May I be happy. Breathing out, may all beings be happy. Relax. Then go to your meditation object. So if one works in this way, eventually, step by step, one should be able to find ease in meditation. When one finds ease in meditation, then the mind itself will protect. Why? Because the mind wants happiness and ease. When it has happiness and ease, it will not allow the defilements to continue. Because it has no happiness and ease, therefore it allows the defilements to continue. So when you find ease in meditation, automatically you will be able to relax, even while feeling pain in the legs and so on. If you don't find easiness in meditation, then your mind will always have a gross tendency either to thinking or to distraction. So please remember these things. The first step to success is to hold the meditation object by mindfulness. Then it becomes a clear object. Without mindfulness, no clear object. Mindfulness is that which articulates the object clearly to the mind. Without that force, you will always be inclined to control your mind and body by force, and you will not experience ease in meditation. As long as you not experience ease in meditation, you will not overcome gross tendency of mind to thinking and to excitement. Please remember this. So next one, in most of the cases, attachment is defilement. However, if Tizang Wang Bosa is not attached to his love to his mother, he may not take the vow of not achieve Buddhahood until all hells are emptied. Do you agree that sometime we may need some attachment as our motivation? The study of Buddhism is study of wisdom. If attachment is continued, it is accompanied by wisdom, then even ignorance is not a problem. But if attachment is not accompanied by wisdom, then ignorance is always a problem. Titang Bosa has no ignorance. His attachment is not a problem because he understands that it is a skillful means. The skillful means are the path of the Bodhisattva. The no Bodhisattva without skillful means. So if we have attachment which is skillful means, beneficial for oneself and for many beings, such an attachment is not really an obstacle if it is experienced with wisdom. We know we have attachment because it is very useful. That attachment will do no harm to anyone. It will be beneficial. So the Bodhisattva, he, for example, he knows very well that pride is due to attachment. But he gives rise to pride for the sake of beings. The Bodhisattva, who is advanced, he has seen thoroughly through the illusionary nature of the beings. But he still sees the beings in order to help them away from suffering. That kind of attachment is not attachment, it is connected with wisdom. So it is not an obstacle in the path of Bodhisattva. It is a support for the path of Bodhisattva. But the attachment, which is the cause of deluded mind, which is not connected with the practice of the paramis, that attachment, that is real obstacle into the path. That is attachment due to ignorance. So, from the point of view of the path of Bodhisattva, the attachment is not necessarily bad. Why? Because the Bodhisattva is practicing the non-differentiating wisdom. And he gives rise to the attachment with this understanding. So he uses, he can use actually the attachment to remove attachments of the beings. That is a good attachment. Okay. In one sitting, I found my body disappear. I search for my body a while, I cannot find it. It was a bit worried, then the body came back. Why is this happen? In another sitting, I struggle with the pain quite some time. Then, without knowing how, it seemed to wake up with my very peaceful mind. The body was still very painful, but I don't feel any struggle in the heart. What is this phenomenon? Okay, so this is a very good question. According to Buddhism, what we actually experience depends on our attention. Attention is called in Buddhism and translated literally into Chinese, the making in the mind, zuo yi. What you make in the mind, that you experience. So understanding attention is the crucial factor in understanding the path of shamatha and vipassana. Understanding attention is crucial for understanding also what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. According to Buddhism, all wholesome states of mind are connected with what is called yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara means the attention which is beneficial, which is reasonable, which is literally rooted in reality. What is the reality? According to the Abhidharma, the basic Buddhism, the reality is impermanence, suffering of impermanence, and selflessness, and impurity of all that is connected with suffering, that is impermanence. So impurity actually is nothing else but the suffering. It's an aspect of suffering. All that causes suffering is impure. So the attention, according to Abhidharma, attention grounded in reality is attention in this making the world in the mind in this sense. It is impermanent, it does not bring lasting satisfaction, it is selfless, and it is impure. Whenever there is holding, which is the cause of suffering. If we make things in the mind in this way, then our mind will be purified. Provided we make it in the mind with mindfulness and awareness. Not just by putting concepts into the mind. Now, the unwholesome attention causing unwholesome states of mind is very, very opposite. This is lasting. This is being lasting, it is the real happiness. Since it is a real happiness, it is mine and that I am. And it is pure. So when we make objects in this way in the mind, we are bound to increase our attachments, our thirst, which are, according to Buddhism, the source of samsara. The clinging to the feelings. Feelings mean receptions of the object. When we pay attention to something, we receive it in the mind. And we receive it in accordance with our abhujita, in accordance with our inclinations in the mind. You receive it in a different way, he receives it in a different way. Everybody, in a way, receives in a different way, because everybody has a different karma. And according to our karma, we receive things in a different way. The karma means will. The present will is always connected with the past will. So, by paying attention to certain things and not to others, whether we are aware of it or not, we are already bound in the complex of either wholesome conditioning of the mind or unwholesome conditioning of the mind. When we have wholesome conditioning of the mind, then our mind, according to Buddhist philosophy, has the equanimity. The more equanimity, the more wholesome conditioning of the mind. That means we do not hold desperately to the pleasant, and we are not angry at the unpleasant. That is equanimity. And we not doing so, we are not excited and we are clear in the mind. So now back to the question, you should analyze with this understanding. The body is still there. If you don't experience it, it is because you do not want to make it in the mind. You have this inclination which you have developed already. In some meditations, they even emphasize you should not experience your body. So the people attune to that. If you have a very powerful meditation, in India there are quite few who have mastered it, you can even bring your body to the state of stone. You don't feel it at all. In India, we can have some nice story before we finish. There is one pilot Baba. You may have heard of him. The pilot Baba is very famous. He goes to different cities in India and he has himself buried under the ground for a couple of days. Then they dig him out, then he waves to the television and goes out and gets a good sack of money. Now he's a very good yogi, actually, very good hatha yogi. He can, by force, he can make his stop his heart beating and make his body like a stone. Then he wakes up and has a glass of milk, then waves, goes away. In the meantime, when he's under the ground, the police surround the place so that no one disturbs him. So, a very good showman. It is possible to do. Why not? If one has a very high level of mastery of the fourth dhyana, the will becomes very powerful. If one has certain yogic techniques, like Murcha Mudra and so on, one can achieve it. Why not? But as far as wisdom is concerned, there is no wisdom in that. The wisdom comes from understanding. Understanding of the body and of the mind which is attached to the body. When you understand them, you can transcend them. If you don't understand them, you have no way to transcend them. So, if you are in meditation and you don't want to see your body, then you may experience, because your mind is not yet like Pilot Baba, you will have to work very hard. But you will experience, you don't want to make mind in your mind, so it will not be there for some time. But in fact, it is still there. It's only you don't pay attention to it. Like if you advance a little bit in your meditation, you may attain some better states of concentration. You may experience suddenly everything disappears. The mind has no object. There is not even clear breath. Some meditators think that this is some higher realization, but it is no use. When nothing, no object to understand, what wisdom is there? So the point of practicing meditation is to understand our world experience, and that we can understand only through body and the mind. So don't take this experience of body not being there seriously. The body is still there, only you don't pay attention to it, that's all. And if you don't pay attention to it, especially if you work on the breath is based in the body. So when you're experiencing the breath, you are experiencing the body. Impossible that you don't experience the body. Even if you are in the fourth dhyana, the image that is you are taking to get there, if you work on the breath, it belongs to the breath. So may not feel the breath with your body, but you feel it with mind. Namely, the image of the breath. That image of the breath, the subtle image of the breath, still belongs to the breath, to the body. So don't think the body is not there. It is there even in the subtle states of meditation. So the more subtle the mind becomes, the more subtle the experience of the body will be, but the body is still there. So again, you struggle with the pain and suddenly you become very peaceful. So it is a very normal state everybody will experience in one way or another. the pain in the body depends how you put it into the mind. If you put it into the mind with a certain understanding, then you can control it. If you put it into mind without understanding, you cannot control it. And if you your concentration gets better, then the pain in the body will naturally go into background. So your mind will become at peace. If you meditate on pain as on four elements, also you will get detached from the body and you will feel the pain in the body just like the elements pushing sensation, hardness sensation, heat sensation. These sensations change in different places, so you can get detached. So all depends how we put it into mind. So it is very important to learn to make things in the mind with wisdom. The aim of meditation is precisely to learn that. Already 2 o'clock, time for photography. But we have, shall we do 2 more questions? Is metta meditation with space expansion, the contemplating all beings in directions, a kind of mental construction? Well, we have already answered that question. Everything is mental construction. What is not mental construction? That you can learn in Vipassana. Or if you practice Chan or the non-differentiating meditation. But actually what we experience in the world mostly are our own concepts, which are mental constructions. Nothing wrong with mental construction, only we have to know they are mental construction. So the practice of metta is mental constructions, but very useful mental constructions. When we meditate, we learn part of meditation is to make in mind useful mental construction, which leads to wisdom and concentration. Meditation, particularly for sitting, is said to be difficult path with so much tolerance of pain and boredom. Amitabha. So-called liberation by self-effort. Reciting the name of Amitabha is said to be as easy path, so-called the liberation by others' effort, Thali. What are the major differences in terms of spiritual benefit in these two practices? It all depends on what I have said, abhujita, on one's inclination. If one has inclination to recite the name of Amitabha and one has a real faith in the Pure Land, it will be very helpful, no doubt. If one has a faith in Zen and practices with it with devotion, it will be very useful. In Chinese Buddhism, you can combine the two, there is no harm. Everything can be combined without contradiction when we have wisdom. If we have wisdom, we see contradiction everywhere. So, Zili and Tali is no contradiction whatsoever. The one is complementary to the other if there is some wisdom. If no, they may appear contradictory, but they are not. The Buddha has emphasized that the learning Dharma is learning skillful means. And the ultimate Dharma is the letting go. In order to let go, we need skillful means. Without skillful means, we will never let go. So, those skillful means which can let go, they are good skillful means. Those skillful means, if Amitabha land becomes source of attachment, I have seen when I was in Malaysia, some laymen, they have problem, and Namo Amitabha crying, oh Namo Amitabha, Namo Amitabha, oh my son or daughter is like that or like that, Namo Amitabha. That kind of attitude that will not be neither Zili nor Tali. That is just ignorance. The Amitabha will certainly come to help if we have some wisdom. Dear Venerable, when I try to think of the good things resulting from the wholesome karma for all beings, I am stuck when I come to the category of the hungry ghosts and those in hell. What good things I can attribute to them? Even the beings in hell or the hungry ghosts, they have the base for goodness. All beings, they have the base for goodness. There is no one else, there is no one who has no base for goodness, because all beings have the mind. And when some good conditioning comes, the mind will rejoice in all beings. So this should be contemplated. Even the beings in hell, they will have some short moments of experiencing some better conditioning. But because of their delusion, they will not see it, or they will not be able to fully appreciate it. So the base of for happiness is in all beings, because all beings have the mind. And the mind is the source of all good and all bad. So, one should contemplate this. The Tizang Bosa can save the beings in the hell because they have mind. If they have no mind, they have no possibility to be saved. And by pointing to the true mind, one can help all kinds of beings in all kinds of conditioning. Okay, so what is the time? Good time for group photography. Yes, please.
Venerable,
Amitabha.
I have a question from yesterday about I think a suggestion of books or a suggestion for combining meditation.
Important is, you know, there are so many books on Buddhism, in Buddhism, especially in Chinese, that you will have to spend many, many lives studying. I think nobody has achieved, not even Yin Shun Zhan Lao, has studied the whole of the Chinese Tripitaka. It is not simply not possible. So what we have to do is we choose something that really inspires us. For example, you are interested in Buddhism as explained in the Southern Buddhism or in the Yogacara Bhumishastra. So you will find in Visuddhimagga many different quotations. So you find out these quotations, you read the sutras. So you direct your study in a certain way so that it deepens your interest. But if you study just a little bit here, a little bit there, then you will not be satisfied and you will find the study more and more confusing because there are so many concepts. Some of many are not related to meditation whatsoever. There are so many historical studies which will not help you to understand Buddhism, in fact. So you have to choose what you really like. Suppose you like four illimitables, meditation. Then you start looking in different... in Visuddhimagga you have a very good explanation of the four illimitables. Then you go to Chinese sources like Ta Shen Zhuan Yin Lun, Ta Zhi Tu Lun, and you look for the passages concerning the illimitables. Then you go to Zhi Yi Ta Shi, Moho Zhi Guan, you will find also some things. You study in this way. Now suppose you interested in Anapana meditation, then you look into Visuddhimagga, you look into Patisambhidamagga, you look into Yiche Shittilun, and you read different Chinese sources, ancient sources or newer sources. You read the Zhi Yi Tiantai approach and so on. So you will have the different angles of the meditation and you will find it more and more interesting. It is different presentation from different teachers. And because you practice it yourself, you will find it more and more inspiring. And then you read some general book on Buddhism, if you introducing the Buddhist meditation. Suppose if you're interested in Southern Buddhism, you study Visuddhimagga, if you're interested in Northern Buddhism, you are very fortunate because you are no Chinese. So there are so many good books in Chinese on meditation. So in this way you deepen your interest on certain subjects. You are interested in Vipassana, so you study Visuddhimagga, then you study, for example, Yichyashatirun, you see how they are different, why they are different, you start to think, then you will get, you study Abhidhamma Kosha and you will see that already the approach to meditation is very different in Northern tradition, in Southern tradition. Then you start thinking why, then you learn more, read more. In this way you will find the study more and more fascinating. But if you read just a little bit here, a little bit there, some historical books, the sociology of Buddhism, and so many now Western writers, this archaeology and so on, and you will get more and more confused about the different Buddhist sects. Their ideas are not clear, but they are always disputing with each other. Many books on that. You will get more and more confused. So you get some idea what you're interested in, what inspires you, and you go into depth and you will find it more and more interesting. So if you're interested in meditation in Southern Buddhism, you study Visuddhimagga with the references. If you know Pali, then you can read the commentary to Visuddhimagga, which is very inspiring. So depends. Since Buddhism, we will only succeed in our study when we are inspired and we have enthusiasm. So you should find some topic which really inspires you and you have enthusiasm for. You are not studying Buddhism for exam. You are studying Buddhism for knowledge. And the knowledge comes only to those who are inspired by knowledge. If we study and not inspired by knowledge, then it will not benefit us at all. And we will forget it right after the examination. So there are many, I know some PhDs in Buddhism, or even PhDs in Sanskrit or Chinese, who don't know Chinese, don't know Sanskrit. Nowadays it's quite common. They just prepare, collect materials for the thesis, then take part in some basic language course for the sake of examination. After that they forget everything and they're not interested, they just want to get a job. In India now many, many like that. So you don't want to study in this way. Okay, shall we do a group photo?